This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Invest Talk. This is the last Invest Talk of the year, of 2014. We'll be starting up again day after tomorrow. But it's Wednesday, December 31st, and I welcome you and thank you for joining us. 2014, last one of 2014. And of course, I welcome all radio listeners, podcast listeners, streaming live listeners. We really appreciate it, and I really appreciate you making a good year for KPP Financial, for Invest Talk, the radio show. I do really appreciate it. As always, 888-99-TURNER is how to reach me during this hour. We're live right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time. You can do it anytime. You can call that number anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but we're live right now. And if you call now, you'll be able to get on the show and ask your question. Hopefully you have a question, but maybe not. Maybe you're getting ready for the New Year celebration. Now, as we look back on the year and an improving economy, we see one standout disappointment. And what is that? Housing. That's what I wrote about in my market commentary today, posted on investtalk.com. Now, why was it disappointing? In recent months, we have seen a slowdown in home sales and prices. You've seen that. That is not to say that prices and sales are negative, because they're not. Just that the pace of sales and the pace of prices have slowed down. The increase has slowed way down. And there have been spots and territories and areas of price decreases in homes. This morning's November home sales report showed us an increase of 0.8% after a fall of 1.1% in October. So November was up 0.8%, but October is down 1.1%. Steady economic growth, job creation, and a very low mortgage rate environment seems to be the tailwind for further steady home sales, and that should slowly push prices higher in 2015. In addition, rents are rising and are at seven-year highs, which tends to push more people to home buying. Banks have also recently relaxed lending standards. So that was my market commentary today. That's the kind of thing I write. And I do this Monday, Wednesday, Friday. A new market commentary on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Try to do something topical. So there won't be a return of the heady days of, you know, the crazy days of the housing market anytime soon. It probably will come back, though. I see no reason why it won't come back. The housing cycle is pretty darn predictable. It takes years, but it's pretty darn predictable. 10, 15 years highs and lows. Okay. Especially here in California. California is where you see it the most. Now, maybe in the Midwest and some parts of the rest of the country, housing is a lot less volatile. But in California, I've been in California since I was five, and it's the peak, the trough of 73, 74. There was a huge peak in 89. Do you remember that? Then, of course, our new peak of 2005. Of course, there's a trough after the peak. Every time, it's pretty difficult. 10, 15 years, and we're probably going to have another one. I don't think we can avoid it. Okay? So what are your thoughts? What do you want to talk about? We can talk about housing if you like. Check in with the phone if you like. Your comment, your questions are all welcome. Give us a call. You can send me an email directly by going to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. You can also send Justin an email if you like. Contact Justin. That's at investtalk.com. Okay? Now, let's see. Let's get to the phones right now. Let's get your voice. I would love to get your voice in the mix here on the show. Here's a call from our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is our number. It's ready to catch your question anytime.
I have a question. I'm holding on to some stocks, and I've got them for about 15 years now. They're worth about $6,000. I get a dividend check every 3 months, and it's a paltry $20 or so. My question is, should one get rid of stocks that are not really producing well and trade up to something up and coming?
Well, it depends on what kind of investor you are. Is the dividends you're getting What rate of return have you gotten over those years? And that would include the dividends you got plus the capital appreciation. And when you look at that rate of return, the market rate for 16 years is probably 9% or so. So what's been your rate? So you got to do the math. You can't say, is that not any good? Well, how do you know it's not good? You got to figure it out. You got to go back and figure out the price. I mean, $6,000, $20 a quarter, what is 4 times 20? You get $80 a year on $6,000? What is that? That's what, 1.5% dividend yield? What is that? I'm just trying to do the math. And that's not very good. But did the stock prices go up? Maybe they're not dividend-paying stocks. Maybe that's not their focus. See, different stocks have different reasons to own. And so if you're saying, should I get new stocks or something that's up and coming? Well, an up-and-comer is much more risky. Maybe you don't want to be that. Maybe you do. So you got to make those kinds of decisions. You have to take a look at each individual stock over the period of time you've had them. Had them for 16 years. That's an awful long time. Why did you buy them? Of course, you won't remember. No one remembers. Maybe you inherited them. I don't know. Anyway, good question. You have to look at your stock and decide what you want from it. What's your goal? Is it a blue chip core holding? Don't know. Now, if you're like many investors, your returns this year weren't what they could have been. If you had a balanced portfolio this year, you didn't do very good. You did okay. Nothing bad about it. But the market itself was up. I mean, what was the Dow up about 7%? So it wasn't a bad year. It was an okay year. But if you had certain sectors, man, you really got hurt. So it was a difficult year for most mutual funds, most money managers. Difficult year for me. Don't think KBP. We some of our portfolios did well and some didn't do so good. So it depends, and that's not unusual. How have you done? You have to take a look at your stuff and say what have I done? What can I do to improve it? How do I make some changes? Should I make some changes? Don't repeat the same investing mistakes next year as you made this year. That's one of our talking points. What are the drillers doing? That oil has just collapsed. So what's happening with the drillers? Are they still drilling? Is there still going? What's happening? I'm going to give you a report, like a report card of what's going on. And what are some of the brand names that are likely to disappear in 2015? I got some names that I think that, well-known names, that may well disappear next year. And there was a recent ruling on IRA rollovers. Totally, it was an IRA rule that everybody was operating under. And the IRS said, for 20 years, this is how you're supposed to apply this rule. And we did, everybody did. And the courts, IRS courts, threw it out, changed everything, telling everybody, even the IRS, telling them you've been doing it wrong for 20 years. Does it have any impact on you? It's about IRAs and IRA rollovers. I think we ought to bring it up. I just don't think it's going to have that much of an impact on everybody. But, you need to be aware of it because your investment manager, or the person managing your portfolio, money manager, if he doesn't know this rule and he does this without knowing what he's doing, it's going to cause you to pay some tax dollars and possible penalties. So I think we need to bring it up. Now, if you want to talk about it, let's hear from you. What's on your mind? The market was down today. It was down pretty sharply, 160 points on the Dow, 41 points on the NASDAQ, and 21 points on the S&P 500. Not something that bodes well for the beginning of the year, but you know what? It's been a decent December. I mean, the month of December, you can't, you look at a chart and say, hey, it was okay. I mean, it was up a little bit for December, not very much, but has recovered greatly. Remember in October, the stock market fell 10%. and gave back all the returns for the year. Remember that? For the S&P 500. And then it made that all back by the end of October. Made that 10% back. So how did it do from November 1st, December 1st, to from November 1st to December 31st? How did it do? Well, it was up a couple points. Nothing major. But at least it made it all back in October. It was very difficult to play that because it was a very sharp correction of about 10%, a little bit less than 10%. But that's what the market did today. Is it a trend? Well, it looks like we've had two or three days of just kind of mixed. But the hardest part is this time of year, the Christmas week and the New Year's week, especially them coming in the middle of the week, where investors and traders are on vacation, taking extra days off. It's hard to know which way the market will go. We'll know beginning of January. Remember last January? Market was down 6% last January. The market started off poorly last January. And that, you know, there is an old saying that didn't come true this year. As the first day of a year goes, so goes the first week, so goes the first month, so goes the rest of the year. Well, that meant that the year should have been down for 2014, and it wasn't. We appreciate our podcasters, and just because you listen on the off hours doesn't mean you can't call us on the on hours on InvestTalk. You can call us anytime you want, but we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. If you can call, please do so. We'd love to hear you. 888-99-CHART. You can help shape the topics we talk about. Weigh in. Bring in your questions. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and this is InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART. Okay, let's go ahead and get this IRA rollover ruling out of the way. I want to talk about this quickly. And what it is, it's changed. You know, if you're one of the 50 million people that have an IRA, this is something that maybe you don't need to know about, but you certainly your money manager needs to know about, and he better be aware of what's going on. The rule that everybody's been living under was based on a publication called the IRS Publication 590, which is the Bible for the IRAs. And this rule is dealing with the IRA rollovers and transfers and those things. Okay, so what the ruling said is you can roll over an IRA once a year. And if that stopped there, that would be fine because that's what the rule was. You can roll one IRA over to some other place to open up another IRA, and you can roll it over. Okay, fine. But what they went on to say is it's one IRA rollover per year, no matter how many IRAs you have. If you had five, you can only roll over one of them once a year, and you can't roll over the others. Before, the IRS said you could roll each one of those over. Don't misunderstand this, though. This has nothing to do with transfers. So in other words, their rollover definition is you roll it over, you take the cash, you open up a new IRA, and you put the cash over there. But if you roll it over directly, you can do that as many times as you want. Rolling over from one IRA to another. That's called a transfer, not a rollover. So it won't affect most of us. It has nothing to do with you can transfer your IRAs as many times you want, anywhere you want. You just don't roll it over, take the cash, and go open up another IRA, and you do that more than once a year for all your IRAs, you're in big trouble. Don't do it. This is InvestTalk. Give me a call.
Thanks for subscribing to our podcast. Whether you're an employer or an employee, you should know about the 401k solution from KPP Financial. KPP Financial, as a registered investment advisor, enables employers to offer custom professional asset management to their employees for their 401k accounts. Find out more about it. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin and write 401k. No one will call, but you'll receive a packet of information by email.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Bill in Petaluma. How you doing, Bill?
Fine, Steve. And you?
I'm doing great.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. You too.
I have a kind of a historical general question, I think. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know if over time interest rates increase or decrease faster.
I don't know if you can say. When you say faster, you might want to clarify that for me. Faster,
okay.
Do they go up faster than they go down? or down
yes,
faster?
Yes, that's my question.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. There really is, you know, I can tell you by studying this, that interest rates have about a 30-year cycle. Okay, they go down for 30 years, and then they go up for 30 years. And this cycle's lasted well over 100 years, by the way. So it's pretty steady. And we are at the bottom of a 30. We're almost 35 years into this falling cycle. Okay, and you can thank the Federal Reserve. They're the ones extending it because of what they've done. You know, but. I'm going to say that interest rates probably fall faster than they go up.
But okay, what I was thinking, just in terms of the tips that I hold, what might I expect down the line? In other words, should I be watching every second or just not, you know, feel comfortable where I'm at and kind of watch things, but not hover over them.
Yeah, you want to watch them, but you want to take a back seat. Don't hover over them. Don't. Because the interest rate rise will be slow. Think about it this way. A year ago in May, this last May, and the year before that May, the mortgage rate was like 3.3. That's as low as it got. And then it went up to 4.25. Now what is it? 3.89. The mortgage rate for the 30-year fixed mortgage. Well, you can actually say, well, interest rates have gone up, right? Think how little it's gone up. In between, it went up 4.25, then came back down almost all this year. Now we're back down to a low point. And the Fed is going to raise rates probably sometime in 2015. So most likely there's going to be some upward pressure on interest rates at some point. So now, if the economy stinks, our economy, and we fall, the interest rates will probably go down lower. But I think that's a pretty remote chance, personally.
I agree.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the call. Good question. Really good question. What are interest rates? And just if you step back and look at a long term, you kind of know that we're at very low rates right now. And it could stay low for a while, but they'll probably creep up. And I know people have sent me emails that I've been saying interest rates are going to go up since last year. I said interest rates are going to go up, and they did go up for a little while, but then all this year they came down. But I've said all along it's not going to be fast. It's going to be creep. And the Fed has kind of not told us the truth. I don't know if you remember, but they were supposed to be out of QE by the end of last year, and they weren't. They got out of it this year. And then they said they were going to be raising rates a year and a half ago. They'd probably be raising rates in 2014, and they haven't. And our GDP number is up 5% for the third quarter. Our gross domestic product is growing at 5%. Normally, the Fed would let rates rise in the face of that strength. Nope. They don't believe in that strength. See, so plus you have everybody else in the world flooding money into the United States because their economies don't look so good. Ours look pretty good. Driving interest rates down, right? On bonds and treasuries. It's the Fed has made it very odd. Not normal. But you deal with what you deal. You gotta play with the cards you're dealt. That's what, and you got, even though it's not normal, you still got to do what you got to do. 888-99-CHART is the number, 888-992-4278. Don't repeat the same investing mistakes you made last year or next year. What are some of those investing mistakes? We're going to talk about them during this hour. I'll give you one. I'll give you one to start with. How about that? Don't trade excessively. In and out, in and out. Are you a day trader? Are you a swing trader? Are you an investor? For the average person, you are an investor. You do not trade. That's not something. Leave that to the experts, and it's already very difficult for them, and they're not that successful either. Trading in and out, is just a loser's game. Over any history that this has been studied, very few professionals could be successful at trading, let alone the rest of us. So don't trade excessively. Doesn't mean you can't trade. Doesn't mean you don't rebalance your portfolio, or you have a stock that you own and things have changed and the competitors are just killing it and you don't want to be in it anymore because of the competition or some fundamental reason why it's not a good thing to own. Yeah, you get out of that, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about trading in and out, in and out, in and out. Okay? Don't do that. That's just one of the mistakes you don't want to repeat next year. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. I'm here to answer any of your money questions. You can reach me right now. I'm live 4 to 5 Pacific time, and the number is 888-99-CHART. Chart. Let's talk to Will in San Diego. He wants to talk about Gilead, listening to us on InvestTalk.com. How you doing, Will?
Oh, pretty good, Steve. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too. I hope you have a great one.
Yeah. I've been reading several publications, and one of the stocks that they're saying should do well in 2015 is this ticker symbol GILD. So I wanted to know what was your take on it.
This is Gilead Sciences, and I kind of like them. I will tell you this. Justin, and I have differences
right.
opinion on this stock, okay? I like it. He doesn't really like it. And let me tell you, I'll tell you the good parts why I like it, then I'll tell you why he doesn't like it, okay? Gilead Sciences, it develops therapeutics to treat viral, fungal, respiratory, and cardiovascular diseases. It's growing its earnings by 290% this year, and then another 24% next year. What's not to like about that?
Absolutely.
And sales are doing dynamite, up 117% last quarter, 136% the quarter before it, 97% the quarter before that, and then before that was 21%, 50%. So it's increasing its sales. The P.E. ratio is only 15. It's a $94 stock. And it's going to make $9.88 next year. That means the P.E. is going to be 10. If the stock does not move, the P.E. is going to be 10 next year.
But so it should be a good buy.
You would think so, right? At return on equity is 33%. I like mine to be 17% higher. This is 33. It's huge.
Yeah.
Now, those are all the good things. Number one, Justin would say that if it's so good, why is it only trading at 15% with that kind of growth numbers? And he would answer his own question, because it's rhetorical. He would say, the reason is because they have a couple of major big blockbuster drugs, one in particular that costs like $1,500 a treatment. And the government may be not willing to pay for that. And he says, look at the stock price. It was 118. Now it's at 94. Why did it fall with these kind of numbers? Because some of the health insurance carriers refuse to pay these huge prices that Gilead wants for its treatment. And he thinks that might be more pressure coming into the new year to reduce their prices. That's his excuse.
Okay.
That's what he's thinking. He says, and if they're forced to reduce their prices, then shouldn't the stock go down? And my reply, Will, is the stock is already cheap. How much further would it go down, even if they were?
Right.
It's already inexpensive based on its earnings. I think that bad news, some of that bad news is already built into the price.
You would think so.
Yeah. So there's the two arguments. The company itself right now is doing really, really good. And they just had another drug approved recently.
Okay.
So I kind of like it myself, and I think this is a good buy point.
Okay, great.
Thanks for the call.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Okay, we were talking about not repeating mistakes, and I gave you one, and that was do not excessively trade. Okay? So when we say that, that doesn't mean you don't trade or ever trade. It just means don't be getting in and out, in and out, in and out of the market. You know, if you think it's prudent to have some cash on the sidelines and you want to take some profits, or you want to rebalance your portfolio because you have too much Apple now because it's done so well over the years, okay, that's perfectly, perfectly reasonable. But don't do it just to be in and out, in and out. Also, don't believe that you're always going to beat the market. Somehow you can always beat the market. It's pretty darn difficult to do that. And this is why one of the reasons why we talked about indexing yesterday, why indexing is so good, because if you buy an index, you'll always perform like the market. Okay? And trying to beat the market, some years you will and some years you won't. It's difficult to do. Difficult. Not impossible, but you know, you're competing with how many other professionals that do this for a living. So if you try to do it on your own, it's very difficult. You don't have the access to the information, the data, the computer systems, or the time. So, and one other thing, I see too many people buying things or buying into someone who's telling them that there is some kind of system, there is some secret formula, there's a secret trading system or charting method that's going to make you millions. Don't buy into any of that kind of hype. None of it. Because it's generally not true. Most of the time, it's not true. 99% of the time, it's not true. There is no magic anything. There's hard work, understanding what you're buying, buying good, solid, fundamental companies. Try to buy them when they're not overpriced. That's what's required. Understanding what it means to buying stuff not overpriced. Understanding when the market is high and when the market is low. When sectors are overbought or oversold. Do you know those things? That takes time. It's hard. It doesn't mean the average person can't do it, because they can't. But they have to be realistic about what they're doing. So don't make those kinds of mistakes. We don't want you to make those kind of mistakes next year. Don't buy hype. Don't. Someone tells you they have a secret, run the other way. There is no secret. None. Start the new year off by getting your retirement portfolio in order. We have two new dates, portfolio reviews in Southern California. I'll be in San Diego County January 13th. And at your home office, and my home office, at our home office in Dana Point on January 15th. And I'm setting up dates to visit people up in the Bay Area in the January. I'll be up there as well. And we'll announce that when I have that day settled. To save your hour, whatever. And you can call up if you're in the Bay Area and you want to meet with me. Call up and tell me what day you want to be there. Maybe we'll do it the day you want. Yeah, because I don't have anything set yet. So give us a call. Give me a call. Send me an email. You can go to investtalk.com. Click on schedule a meeting. And if you're out there, out of range of these locations, by the way, we also can schedule meetings via the telephone. Yeah, we can do it.
Why not sign up to be an InvestTalk insider? Steve has a new info sheet on investing in oil stocks. It's the latest offering for InvestTalk insiders. Why not sign up yourself? It's free on InvestTalk.com.
Yes, this is Chris from Mississippi. I'm an avid podcast listener and have Steve's book also. I'd like his take on Oracle, ORCL, see what you think it's doing and going to do. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, thanks for listening. Appreciate you in Mississippi out there. I've never been to Mississippi. It's one of the few states I haven't been to. I'd like to be there, go there someday. Oracle Corporation out of Redwood City develops database middleware, business applications, software, and hardware systems for enterprises. And it is a very big company, $197 billion. And I think it's Bill Ellis. I'm trying to remember that his name, the guy, the CEO there. He has been buying companies for years, and he's growing this company. He's done a pretty good job. He's also one of the highest paid CEOs in the world. Not embarrassed to pay himself. Anyways, the company is going to make $2.87. Actually, already made, because its 2014 year is closed, and it made $2.87. In 2015, it's scheduled to make $2.96, and then in 2016, $3.21. And the sales and earnings are growing between 3 and 5%, maybe 8%. That's what it's growing. It's very difficult to grow this kind of size of company. And the P.E. ratio is right around 16. Remember, the average market P.E. is 15. And should Oracle deserve a higher than average with growing between 3 and 8%? Probably not. So do you think the market is trading at 16 P.E. right now? No, it's not. It's trading at 17 P.E. right now, which is a little bit on the high side. So this stock is probably a little bit on the high side. Its average P.E. range for the last 5 years is 11 to 18, and it's now right now at 16. The company is very solid. It's a very good company. It's the kind of company you wouldn't mind owning on if it gives you a nice pullback, give you a reason. The middle of this month it was at $40, and right now it's at $45. So it was 8%, 9% lower, and it jumped up for this month. So I'd probably wait for a pullback. You're going to get it. It'll come probably in January, February. I wouldn't be surprised to see a pullback. You're not going to see the company, the stock collapse. That's not going to happen. This stock will not do that. In 2008, its low was 15. That's the crisis year. The high of that year was 23. 2009, the low was 13. The high was 25. You see, and ever since then, it's been making higher lows every year. 13, 21, 24, 25, 29, 35, and right now it's 45. So those are the lows. And right now, it's right near the all-time high for the stock. So I'd probably wait for a pullback and then buy it. If it's a good, solid, blue-chip type company. Oracle, everybody. ORCL is the symbol. Time for InvestTalk 101. How do you protect yourself from market volatility? We're going to see more volatility in 2015. And volatility is a big threat, right? A big threat, especially if you're near retirement. Volatility means up and down. It doesn't necessarily mean down, but most people assume that's what it means, down. It doesn't. But if you're near retirement, it could be a big problem. Why? Why? Because when the market is down and you have to take money out, you're not able to recover because you had to use the money to spend to live. So therefore, the best thing you can do if you're getting close to your retirement years is to take less risk, reduce your volatility in the market. And how would you do that? Well, there's many ways, but the most common and easiest way is to put in some short-term bonds into your portfolio. And I say short-term now because interest rates are so low, and while the interest rates start to rise, you can stretch out, you ladder them. You maybe go out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, 1 to 5 years right now. And then as interest rates go up over the coming years, you keep stretching out longer and longer. But right now, what will happen is if the stock market starts to tank on you, let's say the market starts to collapse and you have bonds, chances are very good the bond values will go up, but you will always get your yield on those bonds. And they will always return to par as long as you buy high-quality bonds and don't go bankrupt, which is what I would recommend. So that you don't suffer the huge volatility of your portfolio when you're withdrawing money to live on. Now, that doesn't mean you'd be 100% in bonds, because then you're going to miss out on all the possible growth. Bonds don't grow very much. They just don't. And where interest rates are going to be rising in the future, very, very slowly, but they will be rising in the future, and that means bond values will go down. You'll still get your yields. So you're not going to get capital appreciation from bonds. It's just not probably going to happen. It's just possible. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but long-term bonds have just not been nearly as good returners of capital appreciation as stocks. So, what do you do? Well, you can reduce volatility by buying bonds. You can also reduce your volatility by holding on to big blue-chip dividend-paying stocks. They usually don't go down as much. They can, but they don't. By the way, I just described our income portfolio. Half of it is bonds and half of it is high dividend big blue chip stocks because of that very reason. When you approach retirement or you want to be a little more conservative, that's what you do. That's Invest Talk 101. If you have a topic you want me to discuss, please call. We'll be happy to talk about it. You can also send me an email to Steve, contact Steve or contact Justin if you want to do that, by going to investtalk.com and clicking on that little icon, contact Steve icon. That's an email that comes directly to my desk. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. We're going to talk about drillers. We're going to talk about what's happening with oil drillers. You know what the oil prices are doing. And I'm writing about it in our newsletter this week. I'm writing about the problems of a lower oil prices will have worldwide. Not necessarily here in the United States. And it really is going to hurt the oil producers and help the oil consumers, countries. I'm talking about countries now. Now, the U.S. is both a consumer and a producer, but countries like the, you know, the Middle East countries, Russia, you know, those countries that live on that oil, and that's how they function, and that's how they fund their government programs, and how they give great discounts to their citizens to gasoline. All that is going to be under a lot of pressure this coming year, 2015. The oil producers are going to suffer. The oil users are going to benefit with lower costs. So what does that mean, though, for the stock market? Well, let's now narrow that down. What are the drillers going to do? What are the drillers doing right now? What is the last month? What has drillers, the companies that go out and drill, are they still doing it? Are they growing? Are they shrinking? What's happening right now? And that's what we're going to discuss. I think it's important that we know what's going on now and then fold that into the context of the bigger picture of oil. You heard us talking about our new 401k solution. If you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com and send a note to Justin. Click on Contact Justin and write in 401k. You can click on Contact Steve, too, and I'll forward it to Justin. He'll respond. He'll send you a packet of information. And you can tell your boss how you can save him money and give employees a better plan.
Distribution of our InvestTalk podcast is made possible each day by KPP Financial. And everyone on the staff at the office and the InvestTalk production team would like to thank you for your loyalty this year and wish you and your family nothing but the best in 2015. And thanks for subscribing.
So what are the drillers doing? The drillers, those companies drilling for oil here in the United States, what are they doing? Well, you know, the OPEC, the oil has fallen almost 50% this year per barrel. And you know, OPEC has said, in particular Saudi Arabia, has said that they're just going to continue pumping. They're not going to slow down. And, of course, that purpose of that was to try to slow down the successful drilling, the shale drilling we're doing in the fracking. Well, recently, as of last week, driller rig count fell by 35. Down to 1,840. And that's the fifth week in a row that drillers' rig count has fallen. So OPEC or Saudi Arabia's plan to reduce drilling here in the United States is working. We are going to be reducing our pumping of oil next year, our drilling for and pumping it out. It will go down. How much? I don't know. Just so you know, though, for 2014, that 50% or so reduction of oil prices, do you realize that has saved consumers here in America in 2014 alone about $14 billion already? Where's that money going? Consumers, are not, do you think they're going to save that $14 billion? Do you think they're going to spend it on other things? It's a good thing. Let's answer one more question before we're done with this hour. 888-99-CHART is how you can reach us anytime.
Yeah, Steve, this is Wells over in Tucson, Arizona. I just was curious if you could highlight the difference between exchange-traded notes and exchange-traded funds. That's ETN versus ETF. Thanks a lot for your time, and I'll be looking forward to a response if you choose to answer my question. Ciao.
You know, I wish I knew the answer to that top of my head. I don't. Why don't I know that? Well, because the difference, I can tell you the difference is very technical. There's nothing dramatic about it. Exchange-traded funds is like a little mutual fund, you know, that you can sell, buy and sell during the day, and so is an ETN. An ETN, though, is a note versus a fund, and so therefore there's a difference in them. And I don't know. You know where you could probably find out, though? You probably go to Investopedia, type it in, and find out, and they'll tell you the difference. It's pretty. It's not going to be hard to find out. And I will find out so I can have that answer for somebody, because I just don't know. 888-99. You want me to go to Rick? Let's try this question from Rick.
Good morning, guys. Just need a little clarification. I'm trying to get my family to start investing as we, you know, begin on our retirement tour here. The difference between a 401 and a 403B, just a little confusion as to how the money gets invested and how the money grows and what are the best number and percentages that a person should put away. Again, just a little clarification. If you guys can help us out on a 401 and a 403, I'm sure the family will be tuning in next week on the internet listening to you guys. Thank you.
Okay, a 401K and a 403B is what he's talking about. And those... the numbers represent sections in the IRS code, the tax code. And a 401k is a retirement account for private businesses. Okay? So they use the 401k and fall under that law. 403b, 457, for the different numbers are for different classifications of entities. Some are tax-exempt entities. They don't use 401Ks. I believe they're 403Bs. So if you work for a church, you know, and you're an employee of a church, and the church is tax-exempt, they could open up a 403B and not a 401K. Now there's the 457. I think those are government entities like school districts or government counties and cities or water districts. All that does, they're pretty much the same kind of vehicle for retirement. Pretty much the same. There's not a lot of difference other than what the entity that is operating, the company, the entity that it's operating under, that the 403B, 401K is. What kind of entity is it? Private industry is 401Ks. Before we close for the hour, I want to wish everyone a happy new year. Let's all resolve to stay alert, okay? Be smart out there, people. Be smart. I want to see you here the day after tomorrow. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein, everyone at KPP Financial, thanks for listening. Let's do it again next year.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.